Alex, I had a good laugh over that. The P and S endorsements are the only ones I'm missing off my CDL. I have CDL Class A, no restrictions, because now there's a restriction for E restriction, manual automatic transmission only, no manually equipped commercial motor vehicles. So that's the E restriction. I don't have that. I don't have any restrictions on mine. I had to take my test twice because of that. I took it once in an automatic truck, then I had to redo my test with a manual truck. Took my automatic test, then went back to my permit, then tested again in the manual truck once I was legally allowed to test in the manual truck. And then I got my endorsements after that. I got my tanker first, and then my doubles and triples, and then my hazmat. But I don't plan to go get that P and S endorsement because I don't have that kind of patience. That stands for patience and stupidity, and I don't have either one of those. You gotta be really patient to drive a bus, and you gotta be really stupid to drive a school bus. I don't have my patience and stupidity endorsements. So I'm not gonna do that right now. Plus, that's 78 lawsuits waiting to happen if something goes wrong. And I don't like getting sued 78 times, so I'm good. That's my little rant about buses and school buses. That's a big nope for me. So, yeah. But I had a good chat with you, Robert. Come stick around again sometime. It'd be fun. KD4SR, KJ4WZM. I don't know if you're still in there. Sorry about that. I just remembered that you had a comment earlier. Are you still in there? I'm just trying to catch back up with you one last time real quick. KO4WWZ, KJ4WZM, if you're still in there. All right, I'm going to make another call for any additional check-ins at this time. Any additional check-ins? Call KJ4WZM. Additional check-ins. So, next up, I have WX7MB. Mark, are you still around? Call KJ4WZM. 7MB, WX7MB, KJ4WZM. For check-ins or comments, call KJ4WZM. For check-ins or comments, call KJ4WZM. WZM now securing the Blue Ridge 2-meter network. Thanks for checking in. Bill, now it's from the repeater. Back to normal amateur use. 73 to everybody, and good night. KJ4WZM, you still around, Robert?
Things are all right. I'm still around.
Who bus is for?
Years, and that was back in the early 2000s, and I'm still in rehabilitation.
That's pretty funny. My first experience with buses was when I was 20 years old. I was a custodian over at Fisher Middle School. And one of our custodians was a part-time custodian, part-time bus driver. And I used to watch him pull in with the bus and park it at the school every day. And that's the first thing he did when he put when he parked that bus was pump the brakes and get all the air out of the system so that it couldn't just be played with. They always drain the tank.
Kids will go in there. There was an original demolition derby with the buses. And their idea was, hey, man, we get to tear the bus up, and then because the bus is tore up, we don't have to go to school. Well, surveillance video caught them, and you can guess the rest, but I don't know if they're still working 10 years later to pay back for all them buses, but I think the district actually didn't care because they were able to get an emergency loan from us taxpayers, and we still never paid back, and they got all brand new buses. So, but one of the most interesting things, you ever driven a hydrovac system? pump on your master cylinder. And you usually find that on short buses. It's cheaper, and it works pretty good. It works more like a regular bus system, but it's stronger than a power brake booster that you would normally find on a car. But when you get in, first thing you did before you cranked up anything was you put your foot on the brake, and you hear it, nothing else going, you hear it go, and that meant it was working. If you didn't hear, then you did not pass go, you did not do anything, you had no brakes.
Wow, see, I know nothing about that. That's crazy. I would never even know to do that.
It was an easy part to replace, and they lasted, given the abuse that those buses have and the poor maintenance. They were a pretty simple system, but when my brother was in Nam, he had a deuce and a half dump truck with a hydrovac system. And when it went out on him when he was coming down through the mountains, hauling loads of dirt and gravel. But he didn't tell anybody because parts were scarce, and if your truck was down, they'd put you to digging ditches or sticky in infantry. So he just used the gearbox on that old 8B71 he had in that truck, and it worked. It worked, you know, just gearing it down. And but one time he had a load, and gearing it down wasn't going to work. So they actually chained the back of his truck to the front bumper of another dump behind him, and he slowed him down coming down the mountain.
Wow, now that's crazy. I'm guessing that since this is back in Nam, that they didn't have jakes on that stuff. Not back then. Because that's recent. That's just about in my lifetime, is it not?
No, there were no jakes. That would have been not the Army way. Heck, Army don't even change oil. They change motors. You're supposed to do it every 3,000 miles. Oh, heck, that way they blowed up. But they could get you a motor, but they couldn't get you a hydrovac or hydro booster. Because, you know, diesels don't pull vacuum. So anyway, it wouldn't have worked if they did have a brake booster. You'd have to have a separate booster pump. Just pull or a regular vacuum pump. So that worked fine until he got away with that. And until one morning, he pulls up kind of bleary-eyed to the number two pump and put JP4 fuel that went to the Cobra helicopters in the truck. And man, did it run good. The fenders were flapping on that thing. That turbo was whining. Well, it was almost like a supercharger on those old 8B71s because they were, it's a weird concept, but they were two-stroke diesels. So they had a supercharger pump. And he did have a turbo, too. Well, man, it was just running good until it literally blew the head off that motor. And that was when they said, Mr. Keller, recruit, soldier, come here. Here's a mine detector. So he swept 10 miles of road on the Ho Chi Minh Trail every morning with a metal detector looking for plastic mines. And that's where he spent the rest of his tour in Vietnam.
That ain't no fun there. Knowing what that fuel did there, I'd be half tempted to mix it up about 3/4 regular diesel of 1/4 of that Black Hawk helicopter fuel, knowing that it ran like that. That's a cool idea. Mix the fuels up to get more power out of it. Hopefully not blow the engine up, though.
It would be more of a benefit if you were in a cold climate. In the jungle, you are never in a cold climate, even when it's monsoon season. So that would be to stop gelling. And, you know, you could put a gallon or two in there, you know, it had to be a pretty light or like 1-to-20 ratio, maybe. I'm just throwing that out there. But JP4 is like high-test gasoline in the kerosene world. And when I worked for a little flying service at Columbia Metropolitan Airport, way back yonder, Piedmont Airlines would dump their JP4 once a week. They had a fuel dump, and we would go down there and get some of it and use it for our torpedo ready heaters. I'm going to let it drop for a second. Say, man, that stuff run good in those ready torpedo heaters. You never seen the end of that thing get that red hot. But it didn't burn the heater out. It may have been eventually burnt out at the end, but man, that stuff run pure. But, it was his time to change jobs, and last month he was there, because they told him if he signed up for 13 months instead of 12 months, he would be not so prone to get recalled. So he said, yeah, okay, if I can make it 12, hopefully, good Lord, I'll make it 13. But that 13th month was July 1968, the Tet Offensive.
Now, I'm real sorry about this. I should know exactly what that is, and I tended to be pretty good in history. But for some reason, I'm drawing a blank on what I'm assuming is one of the most important dates in military history, probably up there in the top 10.
Well, don't worry about it. Don't worry. It's not taught, and a lot of people don't like to talk about it. But what it was is the North Vietnamese Regular Army, NVR, decided to do conventional warfare. They came sweeping down from the north, similar to what Korea, really Chinese troops, did in Korea. And it was massive invasion, which the Americans won at considerable cost. They tried to fight a conventional war instead of the Viet Cong, which Ho Chi Minh learned all that from reading The Swamp Fox, the story of Francis Marion. But they changed over, and everybody had to fight. And the North Vietnamese found out that they were against the greatest army in the world at that time, and they weren't going to beat them that way, even if all their soldiers were really drugged out, which my brother said after every battle, they would go down there and they would find needles and bags. And these cats were feeling little if no pain. And but it took 50 caliber machine guns and flamethrowers, because M16s weren't stopping them. So AKs that they had would barely stop them, would slow them down a little bit. But that was his last campaign, and that was his last month in Vietnam. And right on the way out, he's waiting in a tent to be put on a Huey to get out of there, and one of our friendly fire mishaps happened, and artillery put a round right outside the tent. My brother was reading a magazine, been over reading a magazine, just happened to raise his head up when his shell hit, and a piece of shrapnel missed him by about 6 inches and struck the back leg of a dude who was in front of him waiting outside the tent. The dude got a Purple Heart waiting to get on the helicopter. And my brother almost lost his life right there in the last 10 minutes of deployment.
Crazy, man. That's really, really crazy. He made it home okay?
He made it home, and I have to say, thank God, he did not have nightmares. He didn't have... Look at some of the fun that went on. Stuff. Especially what made it like the Australians were helping us. They sent a and like could be, you know, four got popping hoods and little khaki shorts and a little cocked hat. And good day, Mom. And if they liked you, oh, man, they were your friend. But if they didn't like you, they pretended to be your friend and got you really in Dutch. And I could go on with that, but I don't want to take up the net about some of the bets they made or anything else. But, you know, there was some funny stuff that happened. It is generally hilarious, especially when it involved a 90-day wonder out of the academy, in other words, a second lieutenant or two.
Really interesting, and you don't have to worry. I already closed the net out. I had that WX7MB station in there that was going to hang around for comments, and I talked too long with Ragtu or whatever on the other one, and I think he went away. But the net's closed out now. I did have 58 check-ins.
Part responsibility and alienating him forever, but hopefully he'll come back and realize that we do like him. So if you're out there, friend, please come back and join the conversation. KD4SRR ID.
KDVM. I think he went to bed. but that's all right, man. That's all right. I was actually kind of humored that that Harry asked about the air brake stuff. When I was younger, I'd always heard about commercial vehicles and how they had air brakes. They were just confusing to me how it worked. I was like, how does air stop a vehicle? I don't understand. How does air brakes work? You can't just squeeze air out and push it forward and stop the vehicle. So it must do something, and I didn't know what it did. But that's pretty neat what it does. And I don't know if you've ever had a brake application gauge on any of the commercial vehicles you've driven, but it's been kind of astounding to me to realize that most brake application force tends to take place between 10 to 20 PSI, 10 being light braking, 20 being medium braking, and if it goes up to 30, that is some hard braking, but if you hit 50, you're already locking up tires before you even hit 50 PSI. Like you mentioned earlier, it's a valve. It's not like pushing fluid like a regular brake pedal. It's a valve that lets air into the brake lines. And it takes very little air, shockingly little air, to make a huge difference. Mind-blowing to me how 10 to 20 PSI can quite, well, it's not quick, but figuratively, comparably quickly stop a vehicle that size with that little air. That's crazy.
And relatively straight if you're not on ice. I did have a bigger bus. I had a bus, the old number 37, that was a non-turbo, slow as molasses any day of the week, had a 6.9 liter smoke-o-matic international in it, and of course no heater. Heaters never work on buses. So, but I had it, number 37, and I was like low man on the totem pole. They go like, hey, we're going to get into crap. Below 37, I remember it was 12 degrees that morning in Irmo. And I was the only one. I went out there, pushed in the choke, because, you know, the choke really is the choke on them old motors. It chokes it down instead of just wrenching it up. I hit the wah-wah brake booster, the hydrovac, put the key in ignition, 3 revolutions, and it cranked right up. So I had her out there, and man, they were trying to work on one of them Thomas buses and trying to get them cranked. They were new at the time, the snub nose. But old 37 got rolling, and once I got all my youngins done, I thought I was coming back. I'd go home, oh, Mr. Keller, we need you to go out there. So-and-so done broke down with their Thomas and brand-new buses. And I'll tell you something about them, too. We had a choice of buying Bluebirds with Cummings in them. and with a better Allison transmission. But lowest price we could get, I think they said, was about $85,000 a pop. Well, lo and behold, Thomas of North Carolina then beat us by $30,000 a bus. And they said, we can meet the contract. I'm going to let it drop for a second. Produce you a bus that will haul 72 kids at 55 miles an hour. And they went, oh, wow, $30,000. Yeah, well, yeah, sure enough. They didn't tell you where it would haul them at 55 miles an hour. It meant on a flat. They put the smallest cat motor they could. I forgot the series. It wasn't a D44. D444. They had some other little garbage they stuck back there. And they put the smallest Allison they could get away with. By the end of the first year, I think that was 1999, they had to replace every single one of those inadequate Allison transmissions. Now, Richland District 1 didn't want their athletes and field trip people to do without. I'm going to let it drop for a second. So they bought the nice air conditioned with racks and reclining seat Bluebirds. Odd size, 37.5 foot, with the Cummins in the back. Didn't have a moment of trouble with those. The Cummins had self-adjusted valves. They rode better. They were put together right. One thing we had with the Thomases, they had the brain box in the back. We'd go over a railroad track and the buses would cut off. We finally, when they told us, don't look in the box, we got to have a key, the mechanic's got to look at it and all like that. Malarkey. But one of the boxes was open. We looked in there. Thomas Manufacturing, a.k.a. Thomas Freightliner, whoever, they didn't do any QC. Not a single spade lug was tightened in that box. So no wonder, it's a wonder we didn't short out. And another thing they did, and some of them didn't catch on fire for 10 years, all of them had hydraulic leaks. If you went behind one, you could smell that hydraulic fluid hitting the hot manifold. And like I said, it took 10 years for one of them to catch on fire. When they caught on fire, they burned up good. But they were terrible buses. So, Bluebirds, yeah, you get what you pay for. They're still using some of them 20-year-old Bluebirds with Richland District 1 running them down to Charleston to the aquarium and whatever every week. RID.
That's really, really terrible. My dad used to build bus engines for Thomas Bus. They were Caterpillar engines. They were C7s and C9s. 7 and 9 liter diesel engines. But I think the ones you're talking about are even smaller than those. I think they built a C6 too, and they may have built one smaller than that. But I know that Greenville County Schools used to use Cat engines in theirs that ran pretty good in their Thomas buses. The engine in the back type deal. They also had some Cummins ones.
It's your dad there for him working on them things, but man, the ones we got, oh, they put the smallest, and hey, it met the contract. It would push 72 youngins or 77 youngins at 55 on a perfectly flat road.
7 or 9 liters, that's for sure.
Oh, and Irmo pulled something back about 2001. They got a load of fuel from out of the North Augusta Depot down there. You probably know what I'm talking about off I-20. And they bought a load of fuel and nobody checked it. Well, I learned where did the filling station. You always check load carefully. You didn't stick your flashlight down in the top of the tank and then turn it on. You had your flashlight on, but you want to make sure you're getting what you promised. Nobody checked the load. So then they put it in all the individual fuel trucks, transferred it. So they went out and they filled up all the buses for the entire school district number 5. Except mine. Mine didn't need fueling. Well, one of the special needs, one of the little short box buses, started burping and carrying on, and oh man, it just stopped. They spelled gas fumes. North Augusta had sent them a load of unleaded regular, and they put that in every one of the buses. Good.
Well, wow, I knew you were about to go there, too. I knew as soon as you started the story, just the beginning part of it, I was like, oh, they got gasoline. They got gasoline in the diesel. Oh, man, that ain't no good. Man, that'll destroy a diesel engine, too. You can put diesel in a gasoline engine and don't put gas in a diesel. Just don't do it. You aren't going to run either one for very long, but that is not going to be good on the diesel fuel pump or the diesel motor. Gasoline, you can rescue it. Hopefully before it messes up your fuel pump, but even that, after it's a $200 fuel pump, they ain't going to mess the engine up. But gasoline and a diesel engine will.
He even says that if you're under in a climate or you're going to be in a winter environment that's under 17 degrees when diesel, you know, starts to gel, you can mix 1 gallon of unleaded to a full tank. Most people use kerosene, but you can do that. 1 gallon max to a full tank of regular. Well, these guys had it the opposite, you know. So they had to waste all that fuel, and it took 48 hours over the weekend to drain all the buses and throw that fuel away at thousands of dollars, and then order more trucks to come up and refill them up the right way.
Fuel refunded for the mistake?
That's when they come, they should have checked the load. That's how they got it. Plus, it's a school district. So, the taxpayers, they won't know the difference.
Gosh, they got them good on that one. That's very interesting.
Every single school bus mechanic out there, just 99% of them. You know, I have one that keeps the whole fleet going, and he was the one that was actually first on the scene, and he wasn't the one to check the load that night when he came in. But anyway, we had a, it was an old Ford front. They put whatever front they wanted. Either you get an International, you put an old Ford 700, whatever they had laying around on the line, what you wanted to look like. The rest of the bus was a Thomas or a Carpenter. Or whatever, you know. But they went out there and changed transmission fluid on Allison. So the guy goes in there, he dumps the fluid, puts a new filter in it, puts the pan back on. Forgets to put any fluid in it. The lady gets from her parking place to the gate to go out of the bus yard, and it dies. Heats up the transmission.
Crazy, man. That's really crazy. Wow. Put the wrong transmission fluid in. That's exactly what happened. Now I'm curious as to what type was put in there and why. And one more thing. Are you running a Kenwood radio, and is it overheating?
Yeah, Zoo, and I turned the fan on. It is starting to overheat. Why is it starting to sound funky?
Beep, 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 beep. And it's not that you're timing it out at all.
I need to call her Maybelline after the Chuck Berry song. You know, Ford got hot, wouldn't run no more. Need some rainwater running, blowing under my hood. I knew that would do my motor good, Maybelline.
I think I've heard that one before. That's pretty good. I haven't heard that in a long time, though. No singing on the radio, but yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
And here's another thing. I've got my little HT, my Bose thing, sitting over here on the microwave, which is an unplug, in its little carrier, and it's on the 440 band. In fact, it's monitoring the fleet talk. Well, it's sitting over here modulating while I speak and making noises. Hear me talking on 2 meter. So, you know, whether I develop brain misfunctions because I've got leaks in here, I don't know. But I think it's kind of unusual that it's picking up that kind of interference, modulating to my voice as we speak.
Interesting. Real interesting. Where are you located at?
Largest unincorporated settlement in South Carolina, Joanna, South Carolina. We are still got, 2,200 people here. We had a population of almost 4,000 at one time when the mill was running, but it's a town that has rejected incorporation 5 times in the past because they don't like government at all.
Gotcha. That's pretty funny. Yeah, I've been through Joanna a whole bunch of times. I just forgot the that's where you said you were from. So my guess is that your power output's probably up to, and your antenna might be located inside. Those are my best guesses. And your Baofeng radio, is that only 70 centimeters? Is that 2 meters, 70 centimeters?
It's a dual bander, and NASA's not doing it. Either I burned it out, or it's decided not to act up now, not to pick it up. In fact, he does look like he kind of went off over there. This is KD4SRR. I'm going to take a break just for a second, give this radio time to cool off. Just for a second, I'll be right back.
Sounds good. I'll still be around. KJ4WZM.
SRR, I'm back.
Yeah, I have, I think I'm running around 10 watts right now off of a copper J-pole. It's in my house.
All those feet away, upended nearly 20 feet in the air, attached to a PVC pole and my lean-to garage. I call it a lean-to because it's leaning a little bit right now, but that's where it's at. So it should not be radiating back in here. And by the way, I say that, and my broadcast light just came back on my Baofeng over here. I must be doing something wrong.
My idea. But that's pretty funny. We used to, me and my brothers, we used to have a HF radio in our bedroom. And the antenna was a dipole wire antenna, a G5RV. That was in the backyard, and the closest transmitting portion of that line was located at least 80 feet from the radio inside the bedroom. But we had Christmas lights that were hanging up inside the bedroom that we never took down for some weird reason, and we left them unplugged when we weren't using them. While we were on HF transmitting on the voice portion, on voice, SSB, the lights would turn on and pulsate while we were talking. Like, they'd light up to normal brightness and go with the fluctuations of our voices while we were speaking. And we thought that was the coolest thing ever. I think that has a large part to do with why we always left those lights up and unplugged, even when it wasn't Christmas time, because we all got a kick out of that. That was pretty cool. All the lights would light up. But that antenna was nowhere even close to the radio or our bedroom or whatever. The lights still came on.
And you're not the first one to say anything about that. I've heard that before. In fact, it seemed like I saw a movie or something where that was happening. But, you know, it's a weird thing about radio waves. I've got 3 friends. One of them's gone now, that were all radio engineers. I mean, these are the dudes that worked around, cause, you know, they were first-class cats. So they knew all the ins and outs, and, you know, they were on call all the time. And every single one of them's come down with a different form of cancer. And it's not skin cancer, like from being outside around the climbing the towers. I honestly believe that Jerry and Fane and John George, was it John George or another guy? Being around them transmitters, you know, hours and hours a day, I think it had an effect on them.
Now, there are exposure readings from the FCC on what is okay and what is not okay. And I know with this indoor antenna here, my proximity to it, honestly, if I did this day in and day out with the amount of duty cycles that I have, it would probably be more of an issue than what it is. I'm only running 10 watts right now. But the antenna isn't super far from me. It's 6 feet away from me right now. But if I did this every single day, all day long, I think it'd be a lot more of an issue than 1 hour once a week. And it's not constant transmit, it's, you know, 50% of the time, if that.
Well, see, I cut it down to 30 watts. Can you still hear me all right, or pick up a bunch of noise, over?
Change at all.
Well, you know, there's a thing that's trying to do too much. Maybe the old radio will cool down a little bit now, over.
Hey, I don't know if you know where Gilbert is, but I have a 5/8 wave mobile antenna on the dump truck that I sometimes take down to Columbia to go get sand. And I the funny thing is, this little antenna, I have gotten into the repeater before just fine between 50 watts of power. I was going to say between 50 and 100, but I think the max it does is 50 watts on 2 meters. I've gotten in just fine to the repeater from Gilbert, South Carolina, but I've had to listen on Echolink because that antenna didn't receive as well as it got out. That radio has a way bigger mouth than it does ears as far as the antenna setup I've got. And the same thing goes for CB. I actually have a ICOM 706 that I use that's been opened up, and I can run decent power on CB. I'm not going to self-incriminate or anything. But I can run decent power on CB, and I can get out reliably no matter what the band conditions are. I get out about 10 miles radius around me very, very easily. But I can't hear the regular non-high power radios come in from that far. I got about 2 to 3 mile range coming in from them. That's it.
That's about like that little cigarette-sized QYT I've got out there. It's got a better reach than it does a listen. And I'm watching it, you know, because I still got a few days before I can send it back to Amazon before I'm stuck with it. But I got another antenna coming, and it's going to be, I can allegedly do deep cleaning if I can find anything up here. Somebody told me the one in Spartanburg had at least a little bit of traffic, but I needed a better antenna anyway. I couldn't get the net at all. I could not hear it at all. That's the reason I went to Echolink, which, I apologize, it had weird stuff going on, and very, very slow response tonight.
The one on there, and I just got thinking about something. I have an antenna that I was worried about may have gotten wire in the coax or something, and I've had it indoors now drying out for about a month. And while you're on the radio, could I get a signal report off of this thing just to see if it still works or not? I couldn't find this thing, and when I finally found it, it was exposed to the
Roger, go ahead. This is KD4, SRRID.
I just realized something else about it. It does not have a coax end on it, so it probably did get water damage. It doesn't have a connector, so scratch that. Unless I have another, I don't think I got another antenna base, so I'll have to keep that on standby. I'll have to get a different mount for it is exactly what I'm going to have to do, because this whole thing is all rusted up. I just started taking a better look at it. It's all messed up, so I guess I'll just, the antenna itself still works fine, but I need another base.
That might be what's up with my tram. The little aerial on it isn't nothing but a wire with some squigglies in it. It doesn't have any type of coil or anything on it. But it's older than the boat thing. I believe I bought this thing in the 90s to use with that little Alinco. Was it a 190 something? And Anyway, I kept the antenna because, I mean, what the heck? I think it was $20 back then. But this thing's probably going to push 30 years old, so yeah, I mean, it don't look bad, but everything goes bad after a while.
And I don't know if I ever mentioned my age or if you've ever talked to me before or not, but I am actually 28 years old.
Double your age plus some. About 12 years. I'm 68. I am a curmudgeon. I'm grumpy, but I am not yet a coot.
That's hilarious right there. Oh, trying to think. My dad is turning 62. Yeah, 62 this year. And my mom is 51.
Jiggity, let me tell you something. They say the 50s, you figure it out. But really, you get about 60. 62 is a good year. I was doing a lot of stuff that people were going, like, you still doing that? Not like I was some athlete or anything, but I was working. Heck, I was working at Amazon. But there's a problem when you get to be 62. You figure it out, then the knees don't work.
What has me worried is my family has we all look way younger than our age. And that was the same for my dad until recently when he started rapidly looking more his age, which I kind of feel bad about. And as soon as that started happening, his hearing started going out the window and his eyesight's further going on. Like, I don't have any eyesight problems. My dad has had eyesight problems for a very long time. But I'm sitting here wondering what set of genes I got if I'm going to hold on to my youngness longer than normal, or if I'm going to follow suit with him where things just suddenly start deteriorating really quick. Like, he lost his hearing fast, really quick. It went out the window. I'm going to say it took about 2 years from the moment he started realizing he had an issue until it was so bad that he absolutely had to have hearing aids to hear anything. It went fast. And I don't know if that's going to happen to me or not, but I'm worried. That started happening to him close to the time he turned 60.
Well, was he ever in a war zone around a lot of weapons? Because my brother, even though he was a demolition guy at Nome, it was a delayed process. And so he gets a whopping 5% disability for that. But now he, and I believe because of what he was exposed to, the delayed response to Agent Orange, he kind of started falling apart at age 68, which is about what I am. But he's a whole lot shorter and a whole lot rounder and dense than I am. I'm way too big to what I was, and I blame COVID. I have a permanent, it's hard to get right. I mean, I go every day to the gym, and I do this and that and the other, and I feel pretty good. I get on the scale, otherwise known as the stick of shame, and not a change. I don't go up, but I don't go down. And I verified it with the platter of shame and lies over here. And it's right. I'm stuck at a weight, and then I look in the mirror, and I go like, I wonder if it has anything to do with this carbohydrate container that I got around my waist now.
Disastrous truths here. Well, that thing is capable of going away, but you will have to eliminate pretty much all bread and breading. Throw that out the window. Don't eat it anymore. Your carbohydrates are going to have to come from a more natural source, so like fruits and veggies and stuff like that. And avoid all processed foods. You're halfway there at that point. Then get you a bicycle and start riding that. In the mountains, upgrade hard. And get your endurance up. You ride a bicycle in the mountains, upgrade, and your weight will fall off because your body is going to go into survival mode. And it's going to be tricked into thinking that if it doesn't do that, it will no longer be falling into that survival of the fittest category, and it's going to shed its weight until it matches. That's the best advice I could probably think of to give you, but I've seen people do that before, and it's worked.
Well, it'll have to be a stationary bike because they're not too fond of anybody in spandex or not riding a bicycle around here. In fact, I think they secretly have a competition of who we can put over in the cow pasture without killing them. We literally had that happen to a tour to Joanna.
Something's happening to your radio. You might want to check your connections and things. Your radio's acting silly. That might be, I don't know, your radio's acting up. Anyways, yeah, I wouldn't ride down there either. I don't like, that's the flatlands anyways. Don't ride in the flatlands. You won't lose any weight. Ride in the mountains. I might be biased because that's where I like to ride. I love the mountains and I live right here. I live 8.8 miles from the state line. North Carolina state line in a straight line, and I like to ride up the watershed all the time. There's rarely a car on there. Maybe two cars an hour goes up that road, and the road's in kind of rough shape, but that's where I've done a lot of my bicycle training, was on that road. It's really, really quiet, and the grade is pretty consistent at about 4%.
And that's a good thing since you drive a truck during the day. Hopefully the radio sounded better, KD4SRRID.
I mean, it had suddenly just gone out the window, like you're almost like blowing out the finals in the radio, but you're so far away, if you blew out your finals or whatever, then you wouldn't get in at all. But all of a sudden it just went, like as if you went from 30 watts of power to 4 watts of power type went. It just about went to nothing all of a sudden. And it almost, when you were transmitting, it almost modulated as if someone was doubling with you. And your transmission's done that 3 times this evening.
That I may get to use that 3-year Yazoo warranty. I wonder what their turnaround time is.
It's also not acting up consistently. Because it's back to functioning just fine now. Weird.
80 watts per second. Now I got it back down to 30 watts. What you think?
Sounds good. You've had a slight amount of white noise on you, but there's virtually no difference between 80 watts and 30 watts. And I would think at 80 watts, you should sound like you're sitting right here next to me. J4WZM.
Copy that. Well, I've run my mouth so much tonight. Tell me a little bit about your trucking experience. 28, that's a young man in the business. I didn't get into school bus getting and delivering until I was like 40. And I was in pretty good shape at 40 until I drove a school bus. And then I stayed sick every day during the entire time I was there. Unable to take time off and unable to take anything for it because it might affect my driving.
By having a CDL, you can't take anything, not cough syrup, not nothing, for fear of either failing a drug test or them testing you for something if you get involved in a collision and saying you had some sort of chemical in your bloodstream of some type or other. Your legal intoxication limit goes from 0.08 to 0.04, and all manner of things like that. Having a CDL, you throw a lot of stuff out the window. You can't take pain meds or ADHD medication or just about anything else. So, whoop, that's gone. and I actually have ADHD really bad, but I don't take anything for it other than caffeine, and it kind of puts a big band-aid over a lot of my issues when I do drink coffee, and I'm not addicted to caffeine by any means. I could walk away from it and not ever feel like I have to drink another cup of coffee again. I'm not addicted to it, but the only reason I drink it is to try to keep my focus and my train of thought while I'm having to function properly in in society. Not making stupid mistakes while driving trucks being the primary reason I still drink it. Anyways, let me let this go for a second while I tell you about my career paths here. My late teens and early 20s as a custodian at a middle school. After that, for a short time from in my early 20s, I worked doing construction. And then, from like 20 to 22, then I got into the industrial setting around the time I turned 24, and I did that for a little while, got into welding, welded at BMW for a year and a half, left BMW, went and welded at a place in Marietta, South Carolina, called Hawk Trailers, welded there for a year and a half. They sent me to school for my CDL, and I drove trucks for them for about 6 months. That was over the road. Then I decided to try out local stuff, but only having 6 months of CDL experience, the only place that would really look at me was the beverage companies around here, so I drove for the beer company for about a year, and then I went and drove for where I'm at now for also just about a year. So that's been my adventures. I've got about 2.5 years of commercial driving now.
A great career. Learning welding with skills. I mean, if nothing else, somebody could come and say, hey, my trailer hitch is busted or my plow needs fixing. And at a minimum, you could do that. You could also get into art. I know a guy who is a welder down in Columbia. He makes, he's dead now, but his sons continued with fixing Charleston wrought iron fence type stuff, that kind of thing. But you got all this experience and real work. Where I screwed up, I started in a library when I went to college. And that was just a foo-foo, bluff-off job there. Went from the library to another library. And then I got a job with ETV for a little while. But you talk about politics and brown nosing and all that stuff. I never got fired. I just didn't get renewed, which I guess is still like getting fired. But anyway, so I worked that, and then I worked for an airplane service, aviation, gassed up airplanes, cold work in the wintertime. Took a few lessons. And then a friend of mine said, man, you're just going from job to job. Why don't you come over here and work at the bank? Well, I thought banks were tellers and bank presidents, you know. Well, I went to work in the operations center, and I worked at Bankers Trust for about a year and a half. Hated it, and they don't pay nothing, but it was easy work. And then I went over to First National Bank, which was paying a little better, and got into just the earliest stages of ATM networks. Gonna let it drop for a second. Cool. Because it was all, yeah, I'd worked in TV and looked at a bunch of stuff, but I figured out ADHD plays, which we didn't call it that then, but I had 24 incoming phone lines. I had literally thousands of these little red lights, and it takes you about a year, even to this day, to know what all of that stuff means to even get a idea that something's wrong. You know, first you just go, oh, I see the pretty lights, you know, and then to have a clue of where to go fix it. So I did that for about 11 years, and then they went into the bank merger mania, and you're talking about a lot of personalities. I got out of that in 89, and then I just kind of went from one contract to the other through the 90s doing piecemeal work. And that's how, well, I got tired of doing that, so I thought, well, I'll go work for the school district. And I did that for a while, and then I got back into entertainment. I had done that very early on, so I went out there, I was a house grunt. That's the house crew, the house roadie. And busting trucks, unloading them, putting them out on the floor, building the stage, tearing down the stage, putting it back on the truck, And it was good money while it lasted. And I enjoyed the work. But by this time, I'm in my 50s. But, man, I couldn't do it every day like they used to. Because you're talking 5 o'clock in the morning, gonna let it drop for a second.